Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Max and Halloran continue their conversation with Nick Harcourt in part two of Full Harcourt Press on the Oddcast.
The Oddcast.
Two guys yelling at each other about radio, music, and nonsense. And now, here's Max Tolkoff and Halloran.
So anyway, how many years were you at KCRW?
10.
10 years.
Yeah.
During that time,
yeah.
You also, you know, this is like a highlight for me. One day I turn on the TV and there's your voice on national Land Rover commercials.
Yeah.
You're the voice.
Yeah.
For a few years there.
2 years.
2 years of Land Rover.
You know why?
I don't know why they got rid of you. Because the guy who came after you sucks. I have to say.
I think they've had a couple of people since
they've
I
had.
Left.
Sully Ho, that's why. How far did you grow up? How far away did you grow up from Sully Ho?
I didn't get it because Sully Ho's next to Birmingham. But
I would have said that.
The great thing about that gig, look, everybody who's in radio thinks, I should be a voiceover guy, right? Because we can talk, right?
It's not the same thing, though. They want voice actors.
And now they want celebrities.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, before I came out here when I was in Woodstock, I would drive to New York to go do auditions. I'd literally do a 4-hour, 5-hour round trip to go do an audition. Of course, now you can just do it, you know, on your phone.
Right.
But at the time, I had done that, and I'd come close to a couple of things and never really happened. I came out here, I tried to get a voiceover agent, and nobody was interested. Here's something interesting as well. I said, yeah, I'm the guy who does Morning Becomes Eclectic at KCRW. They're like, what's that? At which point, I knew we had some work to do to get the station out into the marketplace.
Right.
Because in the basement, everybody's like, yeah, we're the cool kids. Everybody knows who we are. I'm like, you know, if they don't know you at a voiceover agency, you're not quite as, you know, out there and obvious as you should be, which is why we started doing presents and created a whole promotions department. That's a separate story. But I couldn't get a voiceover agent. Then I did get one, and they didn't do anything. And then one day, a guy called me who was the creative over at Young and Rubicon on the Land Rover account. And he was like, you ever thought about doing voice stuff? Because I listen to you every morning, and
I
love your voice, right?
Yeah.
Right? And interestingly enough, I went to London right after that, and we did a week of shows from London, which was an amazing experience, from BBC Radio 1, from Maida Vale with Sessions. And I did an audition from London. I came back, and I got the gig for 2 years. And let me tell you, that was a lot of money that I really missed it when it went away. And the only reason I lost it was the same as most things happen. Creative changes, new guy comes in and wants his own English guy. But I was in a studio probably 3 days a week, every week, doing all the stuff, because it was radio, TV, web stuff was just beginning as well. It was a lot of fun, and I made a couple of bucks.
And you got a free Bentley out of it too.
I'm
very jealous about.
Did not.
Just kidding.
Although Bentley's not made by that company.
No, different company.
If they had given you a Land Rover, that would have been great.
He could have bought his own with the money they were paying him.
I should have.
I used to give him shit at the time when he was doing it. I would go, hey, Nick, can I get a deal on a Land Rover? Can you get me a discount?
Yeah.
Call your guys. See if you can get me a discount.
Sure.
But there's a reason he's not doing it anymore. They've just, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's owned by an Indian company now.
Tatva, right?
Yeah. And they've just laid off a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
In Birmingham. Birmingham was the heart of the auto industry in the same way that Detroit is, I guess.
Correct. That's because when I moved from Detroit to just, you know, outside of Coventry, Birmingham area, it was like, I was like, oh my God, it's the same freaking town.
Have you watched Peaky Blinders?
I have watched Peaky Blinders.
It's so accurate. Let me tell you, I've been to Birmingham a few times.
Oh, really? Is it so accurate because you were alive at the time?
I was alive.
You were alive in 1925?
I went to the...
Do you have any idea how difficult it is to do this show?
Listen to me. Let me explain two things to you, Tolkoff.
Can you take over?
Here's the deal.
You two sound better together than I have no patience for this anymore.
First two seasons of Peaky Blinders are unbelievable. Third season, they kind of lost the plot. They brought it back in the fourth season. I'm intrigued to see the fifth season's about to kick off. But
didn't you like Tom Hardy as the Jew?
Oh, I love Tom Hardy. He was great.
Oh my God, that was so weird.
Great.
You haven't
three.
Seen the show, have you?
Peaky Blinders?
Yeah.
I lived it.
Yeah.
He and I lived it.
In 1925.
He and I lived it in
those,
England.
We had those flat caps on with razor
flat
blades
caps,
in them.
Yeah. Razor blades in them.
As long as you don't have the haircut, because the haircut is like the Nazi party haircut.
The haircut's a little rough.
Yeah, but here's the deal with the haircut. You got to remember something.
And
it was basically because,
now. Here,
because it would fit underneath the hat and nobody could see it.
My favorite football team, as I think you know, is Aston Villa. There are two teams. And when I say football, I mean, you know, the game you play with your feet.
You have a suitcase with the logo on it?
Soccer, I do. My girlfriend bought me that.
You posted the pictures.
Look,
funny.
It's one of the very few things I hang on to is my football team. And we've been...
That was a Birmingham thing, hang on to.
We've been... That was like a Liverpool thing. Or hang on to? Or, no. it's a fine line between a Brummy and a Scouse accent. It really is.
There is.
So my football team, we've been doing shit for ages. We just actually got promoted back to the Premiership. But there's a guy who is the star player on our team called Jack Grealish. I mean, how English a name is that? And he's got the Peaky Blinders haircut. It's very strange.
Everybody does in this country.
So it was Aston Villa from day one for you then?
Absolutely.
Never went to see City play at all?
You had to. Yeah, I did actually go see City play. My grandfather, my granddad, who I love very much and miss every day, he wouldn't take me to the Villa because he was a Birmingham fan. Birmingham City is the other team. So I went for, you know, maybe half a dozen games with him, and I was like, granddad, I can't go see the Blues. I've got to go see the Villa, you know. So I went to the Villa.
And how far away are the stadiums?
From each other?
Yeah.
4 or 5 miles, something like
see,
that.
See, that's the crazy thing about England. You can be that close in a town, and there still is fights between fans in pubs.
It's not as bad as it used to be. When I was a kid going to those games.
That's what I'm saying. But we lived the Peaky Blinders back in the 70s.
In the 70s, it was rough. I mean, I remember going to a friendly once. It was Villa versus Warsaw, preseason friendly.
Which is another team from around the corner.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of Manchester United fans who had nothing to do that day came down for the fighting.
Right.
And I remember seeing running battles. I mean, I'm like 14. Running battles through the streets of Warsaw with bricks hitting people's heads.
Oh, yeah.
Insane.
So to give you an example, in the Birmingham area, Aston Villa, correct me if I'm wrong, City.
Birmingham City.
West Brom.
West Bromwich Albion.
Wolverhampton.
Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Coventry Close.
Coventry City.
There was another team in there,
Walsall.
Too. Walsall.
Yeah. All within like a 25, 30-mile radius.
In basically one city. Six teams in one city.
And everybody
area.
Had their own favorites, and there was fisticuffs between everybody.
Well, not fisticuffs, more like knife-a-cuffs.
How would you classify, or how would you describe English fans versus, let's say, like, you know, people who are into the Patriots in Boston,
you know,
the super fans in America are not quite as super as the English fans.
I haven't been for a long time. It's very different. You know, they bought in all seat stadiums after, you know, some horrible riots.
Horrible things.
Fires and some terrible things that happened.
So people crushed to death.
Yeah, they bought in all seat stadiums, which changed things a lot and made it more of a family thing. I think it's a lot better than it was.
All right, let's continue on, because there's something I want to ask him about, and then we can wrap up if he wants to.
I'll keep talking until these guys
all right,
say,
fine.
Get out.
I know you're watching them. I just want you to understand. Can you guess how many minutes we've been doing this? Because it's been flying by.
65 minutes.
It's been over now.
Just an hour and 4 minutes right now.
So I was right. I was very close.
You were finally close.
Finally. All right.
excuse me.
So you've obviously done a lot of other things. What I want to know about is lately you have started your own consulting business for bands.
Independent artists.
Independent artists, which I think is so great because it's needed. Who's gonna tell the truth to bands about what it's like
Nick
to go
Harcourt
out
is.
Into the marketplace, right? Which I think the label doesn't really tell you the truth and tell you how to get it done. And how to get the word out there, correct? Am I correct in that not?
Well, it's even before that.
Because what you're offering is, well, explain how it works first.
I'm offering, I think, direct, basic advice and truth if you're an independent artist and you want to get your music out there, most people have no idea what they're up against. So I've been managing an artist for the last 6 years now, Keita Klein, who is somebody that I met in LA and became a fan of and started working with, and I've made some videos for her, and you know, I'm her manager, and we're out there fucking hustling like everybody.
Right.
And what I've learned through that process is, you know, what you can do for yourself, right? Because you still have so many people under the impression, mistaken impression, that all they got to do is get their song to the right guy and they can get a deal. I mean, still people feel like that because they don't really understand it. So what I have learned is that that's very unlikely. Always has been unlikely, no matter who the gatekeepers were. I mean, we've got now, obviously, a little bit of a democratization of distribution because you can put your own stuff out. And obviously, Spotify has come along and streaming services.
Right.
You can get your stuff out there. But what can you do yourself to give yourself a leg up as you're
so
out there?
So do you tell these artists that they have to go and do the work? They have to go and do interviews? They have to go to the stations? They got to push.
No, because I don't.
That's secondary. It's like even getting to the first part.
Well, because I don't think radio really makes a lot of difference. I hate to say it. It really doesn't. Not at that.
Isn't it ironic though?
Not at what level? No, wait. I think it does make a difference. No, I think it. I don't know. I think it does make a difference. It's sort of like yes, music is found in a lot of different places nowadays, but I look at radio still as the turbocharger. Okay, your song goes from zoom all the way to the top. If you get, let's say, and I'm talking about top 40 now. All right, if you get that top 40
airplay, you're talking about the 17th process.
I understand. I'm just sort of cutting to the. I want to know radio, what it is that you tell
radio's
bands
the last
to
thing
do.
They need.
They have to do their own work.
Radio is still important.
Yes.
Once you get there.
Right.
But the problem is most people are not going to get there. So if you're talking to an independent artist, whether they're 16 or 40 or anywhere in between, if they're a band, a singer-songwriter, I try to give them realistic expectations. So what I do is the first thing I will do is I'll listen to the music and I'll critique it honestly. And I will say that out of probably the 40-plus artists I've consulted in the last couple of years, maybe 30 or a couple more, 32 or something, have had something that I feel was worthwhile. And there are other people who I've had to really be honest with as kindly as possible, because it's not my job to, you know, burst somebody's bubble, but to suggest that they might want to look at doing things a little bit differently, however that is, whether it's like, you know, maybe you should do songs this way, maybe you should drop that part of it, maybe you should be a solo. I mean, just sort of be kind and just say, I don't think what you're doing is really going to be, you know, find an audience.
Sure.
Once you've got,
and that's what they're hiring you for. Once, is for your expertise,
well,
your opinion, your honesty,
to tell the truth.
To tell the truth,
you know.
Yeah.
But once you've sort of had that conversation, as I said, most of them have, you know, had something that I felt was worthwhile. I just go through the process of telling them how to put the music out there, how to image themselves, how important the photographs are, how important the artwork is, how important their social media presence is, how often they
and
post,
most of these
cetera,
bands,
cetera.
A lot of these bands don't know this. They have no idea. This is the first they're hearing
That's,
about stuff like this.
Most of them don't. Most of them will come in and they'll say, "I'll say, so show me your show me your imaging, show me your stuff," and you'll see like, you know, seven different types of photos of what looks like seven different bands or artists, you know. And I'm like, you just need to be concise, you know, decide who you are, decide what you want to present.
Right. Years ago, because we all of us grew up in the era where record labels could decide your fate depending on how good they were at picking the right photographer, artist to do your album covers and stuff. And then it got pretty cliched after a while. Like the Hypnoses of the world back in the day when we were growing up, it was like, wow, you just wanted to buy that album no matter what the fuck was on it. And that's why people like the Catherine Wheel hired Hypnoses to make them look fucking cooler than shit. But nowadays, it's like a lot of bands don't even understand that that used to be an art form, because they don't think of it as anything, because it's not, you know, I need my MPC player, am I this, am I that? And it's like, you know, what am I doing? It's like they're looking at it from creating the musical side of it. Don't understand anything else about the marketing, artistic side of it. Is the mix good enough? I mean, how many times have you just gone in there and like going, who the fuck mixed this thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's all a part of it. But I think, again, what you've got to sort of boil it down to is like, if you are going to get anybody's attention, that moment that you have their attention, you better have your shit straight, right? Whether it's how it sounds or what it looks like. Because you're probably not going to get another shot, right? It's like in the old days when people say, hey, so you should listen to this CD. Check out tracks 2, 5, and 7. You're like, if you don't get me in the first 20 seconds of the first track, What the fuck am I doing?
Right.
You know, it's like you've got to be on your shit. And the deal is if you can have your own stuff sorted and be tight with your presentation, with how it sounds, then you've got a shot, right? But until you get that right,
yeah,
you're wasting your fucking time.
Can you give me an example in your history of when you remember bands that came along and you just were like, holy fuck, these guys have got it. And then they didn't make it. You know what I mean? Like everything's going for them. The song's freaking perfect, whatever the fuck it is. And then the opposite, the ones that basically didn't have their shit together that ended up becoming fucking huge. And you're like, what the fuck happened here?
I don't know. I don't know if I can pull that out of my ass right now.
Okay. Give me your favorite band that you fell in love with the second you heard the first track and you championed them, then you played them and here they are still today doing their thing.
Who
you consider, I don't want to say a friend, but somebody that they remember you, well, you busting
you,
their ass.
You know as well as I do that you don't make friends with the rock stars. I mean, we all learned that from Cameron Crowe, right? But there are a number of people that I've helped along the way who still talk to me, and there are a number of people who I can't get near, you know?
When you take on a client, how long is it for? Like, they pay you a certain amount. Is it for a set amount of time? Do you stay involved with them for, like, a couple of months, 10 months, a year, more?
It's a two-hour session.
Yeah.
And I always tell them that if they have any questions to follow up, you know, in the coming weeks or months ahead, and they do, and I'll quite happily, you know, follow up and answer a question. Hey, I've just done this other new song. Can you tell me what you think about it? Or here's the artwork, or I've just did a new photo shoot or whatever. I'm happy to follow up because that's easy. And then there are some people who've rehired me further down the track and said, hey, I've got some new stuff here. And, you know, can you come and visit me again for a couple of hours and we'll just see where we're at.
How many English bands have you taken under your wing?
None.
That's unfortunate. Somebody needs to take English bands and tell them how to speak into microphones when they do interviews.
You know,
three of us, by the way, you're from England, you're from England, I'm not, but I've interviewed enough English bands to go, here, guys, you got to put the mic up because they don't want to speak into the mic.
Here's the guy with the worst mic technique telling me how to fucking tell the English bands how to... I'm not from England.
Let's let this roll for 1 second while I just go check with those guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I see people moving.
It's okay. This will be in the show, too. So, Mike, while Nick has left us for a few minutes, he's probably going to go pee.
Because we're going to edit this part out.
No, we're not.
Yeah, we are.
No, we're going to leave this part in.
Nick, we're at KCSN, by the way, which is Cal State University Northridge, where there was a huge earthquake years ago. And right. We're just checking in. Nick is here now
after having been at KCRW for years and years
right.
and years.
And they're just checking. The interstitial part we just threw in there was basically explaining that you went to check on a band. Did we ever find out the name of the band that's doing a session today? Because we're actually still on. We're technically still on.
This will not be edited out. This is all going in.
You don't have to.
We'll find out later. We'll find out when they get huge.
All right. Or maybe not.
So
this is another revenue stream for Nick. This is something that he's doing because he's
to make a living.
Michael, you could do this too, by the way. You have the same ability to give advice to bands. I don't know why you don't do that.
I do. At this point,
But you're not charging for it.
I am not charging for it.
You should charge for it.
I'm going to hire Nick as my agent.
Oh my God.
Why don't you two do it together? Sure.
I'm going to pay Nick. Here's the deal. I've been doing this, you know, like most people that you know, I think, and that I know, none of us made a lot of money in radio. Okay, so most of us are looking for different ways to...
Do you know the most money I ever made on a job before you finish?
Wasn't that payola gig, was it?
No, okay. It was at a record label. It was at A&M Records. It was the most money I ever made in my entire career.
So the point is, like most people, I'm hustling gigs like everybody else. I have a part-time gig here at the radio station, which, you know, the radio station might not be this radio station at some point in the future. So that's a whole other thing that, you know, we can't really get into.
Right.
But, you know, I'm looking to ways to make a living. I don't do music supervision anymore, but I do a little bit of TV stuff. I'm pitching a TV show.
Didn't I see you on a TV show a couple of years ago? Weren't you doing an interview show for somebody, or is that Matt Pinfield?
Well, Matt did that for a long time, obviously. No, I did a TV show called Guitar Center Sessions.
Yes, that was it.
Which was on DirecTV for 5 years. We did 100 episodes.
I've seen a few of those episodes. And you're very good. I think you have a future in this business.
Most of them are good, you know. And again, how fortunate for somebody to say, "Hey, would you host a TV show?" And I'm like, "I have no idea." Yes, you know. And I learned how to do TV. I mean, I would say I'm blessed if I believe.
It's the only difference is that you're doing what you normally do. They just put a camera in the room to catch people's reactions and the songs.
Sure, like but you know, I'm sure that there's plenty of radio people who cannot do television, mm-hmm. and not because of the way they look. There are plenty of people in radio who just cannot, you know, be in front of a camera.
Right. And by the way, it's a
different skill.
It's like with this voiceover thing. I had a voiceover coach for a long time. Not a voice. I'm sorry. I had an on camera. I went to a talent agency and I got taken up as a client for on camera stuff. I never got a commercial, but I asked them constantly because they also had voice. Right? They had.
They didn't do
audio.
Sons of Anarchy. They couldn't bring you into Sons of Anarchy.
No,
for
they
something?
Didn't. Here's what they said to me: we have too many clients that we have to pay attention to now, and besides, you're from radio. And they don't like radio people. And radio people don't get voiceovers.
You know
because,
why? Because they announce the
yes,
whole thing about
because,
it. Is they announce all the time, this is Nick Harcourt. Here comes some Coldplay.
And if you talk to some of the people that have gone on to do voice acting, voiceover stuff, they basically beat the radio out of you. They beat it out of you.
I have to point out something. Kiefer Sutherland was on that 106 channel on XM/Sirius, whatever they're fucking called now, the talk thing. And I was listening to him for 10 minutes going like, is that Kiefer Sutherland? Because he does some of the best voiceovers I've ever heard in my life. Does some of the most heartfelt, you fucking believe what he's saying in that commercial. Him, John Hamm. But when he was on the air as a artist talking about his music and stuff, did not sound like the same guy.
Right.
It was weird. It was like he knew the difference of how to act into the microphone to deliver the line as a voice actor.
But he couldn't just be himself doing a...
Nope. It was funny.
But, you know, it should be good for you because you never learned how to be like a stupid, you know, radio, just straight ahead jock. You have personality in your voice. It's a hard thing to teach. It's just sort of natural. It's like when you found Anya. Anya didn't need a lot of training to be on the air.
She was a natural.
She was a natural. And that's what we always look for, obviously. But, you know, you can't always find it. I mean, you can't always teach somebody to be natural as well. I don't think I was very natural. I didn't.
You came from advertising. You came from the big headline guy.
No, I
that's
came
right,
from radio.
Big headlines.
All right, did
so,
advertising.
So,
all right,
we're gonna wrap this up.
Nick, are you done with this?
No, somebody's asking me to jump out of the log that I have up in front of me because I was recording some voice tracking. So I'm just sort of like taking.
By the way, it's an honor to not only be here but to be doing the show in an actual studio,
in a real
with
radio
radio station with microphones,
yeah,
as opposed to the rig that you have us doing it in every week. In your living room with all the echo.
You know, if we were,
you know, last week we were doing a show with moving blankets over our heads.
If we work this right and, you know, we sort of like, you know, keep it to ourselves. I mean, you know, maybe we could, you know, we could do a rental thing here. 2
really?
O'clock in the
yeah,
morning.
Yeah, there we go. 2 o'clock in the morning.
No one.
How much
know.
Is the
really?
Rent? How much is the rent at
I don't know.
KCSN?
I don't know what you got. I mean, I'm talking about.
You're talking about little five finger discount.
I'm trying to, you know.
Nick, I have an
I'm
idea.
Working, I'm working all the angles.
Listen,
now.
People in the industry don't really like me and Mike.
I thought you were going to say you.
People really like you. So here's what I'm proposing, Michael. We bring.
That explains a lot.
We bring Nick on board, right? We make him part of the Oddcast, and then we sell advertising. That's how we're going to make our money. We bring Nick on to be like the music reporter, right? And that way, we can all make money.
This has been an hour and 10 minute long pitch to bring Nick Harcourt into. So we can have some credibility.
Why not?
Do you want to do a feature every week?
Why not? We'll put it on the podcast. We'll get out there to the five
people. He can do it
people.
Himself, we'll for Christ's sake.
He can do it himself, but I think, you know.
He doesn't need us.
Do I just voice track something to you? I mean,
you can do that.
What are we going to
sure.
do?
Sure. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
You know, you want
I think it'd be great to
you
have
you want to
him
come
on.
To Northridge every week?
I will. He doesn't have to, but I'll come out. In fact, you know what? You and I will do the show.
The train comes out here.
I might be here another week or two, so we could probably get at least one.
All right, very good. Excellent.
That sounds ominous.
We've talked a long time. Is there anything else that you want to talk about in your career that we haven't covered? Because it's been very comprehensive.
I have a couple of questions for him, but
right.
believe it or not. I let you talk to him forever.
All right. I would ask him. Here's a question I would give him. Ask him what he thinks of the state of alternative radio today. I know
he doesn't give a shit about the state of alternative radio.
But I would like his opinion.
For the same reason that you don't even know what's going on in radio. You don't even know where half these people are that you contact every week. You don't even know where they work. You're like not even sure that, you know.
That's
okay,
age.
Let me ask you this.
I have dementia.
Where's Garrett Michaels this week? Do you know?
He's at 91X, isn't he?
Are you sure?
I don't
positive.
Know.
Okay.
I thought so.
So, Nick, here's what I would love to know. Wonderful career at KCRW. If you could, and this is just the fantasy world. Mm. Let's say the KPCCs, let's say there was an opportunity, like a KEXP startup comes to Los Angeles or any other market. You obviously are saying no block programming, right? That's the thing you brought up before.
Correct.
Think that's killing KCRW at this point.
I really do, yeah.
What would you do if there was the Paul Allen? It was Paul Allen at KEXP, right?
So if somebody came in and said, okay, we're starting, or maybe they came in and took this or something.
Let's go Spielberg, somebody who's uber creative, knows what to do, knows how to get to the heartstrings.
Bunch of money.
And he says, what would you do? What would you do? What would you change the station to, and how would it work?
Well, look, I mean, Los Angeles is, as far as I'm concerned, the most important radio market in the country. And I'm sure people in New York will disagree, but for me, it's Los Angeles. And the fact that Los Angeles doesn't have a cool 24/7 non-commercial music station is a travesty. You know, a couple of people have tried to do it. A couple of people have made half-hearted attempts to do it, but nobody's really pulled it off. The people who are doing this well, you referenced KEXP, and we were talking earlier on about a couple of other stations around the country, are the people who understand that the way radio can still be a player and still be important and still succeed is to program to its community. You've got to be a station that involves the people that you want to listen. You've got to find the demographic that is passionate about music. And how you go about that is you program music, a variety of music. You've got to open it up. You've got to think, a station like this should be playing hip hop. A station like this should be playing Latin alternative music. It's not just all about white boy indie rock, you know. It's like really trying to program America, you know. And I know that we live in a really weird political situation right now, but that's why we're in a really weird political situation, because, you know, America is different from the people who are running it, and it's the same in radio as well. So I would be looking at a station that was inclusive, that skewed younger. A lot of non-com radio, the listeners are like, 50, and there's not a good future in that. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm over 50, and you guys are, we're all peers, but there's plenty of people who are our age who will listen to younger music. But the point is, radio has lost a generation of listeners. You've got to find a way to bring them back. And I think by being involved in your community, supporting local music, not just with an hour on a Sunday night, but, really scheduling a lot of local music, because there's so much talent in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, being involved from the point of view of events and getting out and about into the marketplace and really doing it old school, really. I mean, you guys come from obviously I know you started at non-com, but you're best known for your commercial work and you the same. And I have that background as well. And, back in the late 80s and in the early 90s, before it really sort of started to get horrible, the stations that you guys were working at, when I was working at DST as well, we were involved in the community, and people felt like they belonged to the station. The station belonged
absolutely.
To them.
You know, it's funny. This advice is given to a lot of stations today. I think of Jacobs Media, right? Fred Jacobs. This is what they do. They tell people, you read these articles that everybody publishes every week. Here's how to make your station better. Here's what you should be doing. And, local community, being part of that is like the number one piece of advice which nobody takes. This is why radio, commercial radio, sucks, because nobody is doing it. And the fault is with the managers, with the GM and the owner, which go, they don't understand how content and programming operate. So they want ratings, but they don't understand that your station has to be local to do it and has to be really plugged in a winner.
Right.
I don't understand how this basic concept,
but here's
is being
the thing.
Ignored. I don't
everybody,
get it.
Everybody, and this is,
I don't understand.
And I think the problem was, because I remember the first time when 90Rex, when we got our first URL, and nobody knew what a new URL was, and we got 90Rex.com, which was at that time free to get, and it registered in my name in those days. Nobody really realized that was not the gateway to say, we're going to now take on a bigger audience, because your transmitter only goes so far. And if you look at your transmitter as being the lighthouse that people can see and go, oh yeah, I can see those guys. That's what you have to commune with. You have to commune with those people, as you keep talking about. The local hip-hop scene in Los Angeles must be freaking massive, must be. And if they don't get airplay on, what is who would be playing that? Power? Who would be playing?
Yeah, they're not going to be playing local hip-hop
That's
bands.
Where... Could you imagine if you just supported...
Well, and Latin alternative as well. There's no home in Los Angeles for Latin alternative music. Are you kidding me? I mean, the population is 50% Latin, you know, and you go to those shows. At KCRW, we had a big, big role in helping develop that market. And we would go to the shows, and the shows would be half Anglos, half Spanish kids, you know.
And all sold out.
All sold out.
To the rafters.
You know, so it's really about sort of...
Well, remember, at Y107, we had the Red Zone, which was...
Zona Rosa,
which was all, you know, Spanish alternative music, and there was a lot of it. And
still is. By the way, the new Mano Chao. I don't know if you've heard the Bloody Border.
But I do remember him coming on KCRW many years ago, and people coming to the station to give him weed. That was a fun day.
Well, he's been banned apparently from playing in Tijuana.
The other format I don't understand, which is I know it was done a little bit in L.A., which was the Mars format. There's a lot of EDM fans, and I am one of them. And there's no commercial format.
There's the problem is you just called it EDM, and that's
so what?
That's like saying there's K-E-D-M. A lot of for that punk rock music, you know, like the Joe Jackson. It's like the thing. The problem is that everybody wants to put it under the umbrella of EDM
because that's the way we live.
That
we
the
put labels
is
on
more
things.
Important than the dance music part of it, and that's what it all kind of.
I'll call it chill. What do you want to call it? I think rave music.
I just think we have to rave. It's electronica, man.
Electronica. What a great term. It went away. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I loved it.
I think we have to sort of imagine a bigger basket. You know what I mean? If you really want to be successful at programming like a cool radio station.
Yeah, but don't you think that there is room for some niche formats that?
No.
No, I don't, to be honest with you.
You don't.
This is the thing I'll tell you. I went to the thing down in Long Beach a few weeks back that a bunch of bands played at, and I watched The Rapture come back after almost 8 years of disappearing. And The Rapture, to me, when I first sent two San Diego guys, right? But they moved to New York to make it huge. They were signed to Sub Pop at one point, lived in San Francisco, lived in Seattle, moved to New York. My favorite part about their show is it's a live band playing dance music, kind of like when Gang of Four first came out.
You were like,
"Oh my God, Gang of Four! It's a dance band singing about like executions." And like you're like, "Well, this is kind of interesting. You can dance along," and you suddenly realize that the dance part of it was always an essential element for everything that was done.
Yes.
But then when somebody goes, "Yeah, but the synthesizer can do it better," that's when they got lazy to me.
Yeah, that's
and there needs to be a groove there. But to my point is, a band like The Rapture is not EDM, but it is that culture in the same way that Tom Tom Club used to be. Early Kraftwerk, the remix stuff that Kraftwerk was doing, Massive Attacks, all that kind of stuff. And that's where I think, not niche formats, there should be, all those things should be just dumped in with everything. You should be able to come out of a Rapture song into a class song.
I kind of agree with you there. I'm sort of envisioning that it could work that way. But then I go, I don't know. There's too many different
Let me tell you. Audiences to serve.
I did that
for 10 years. And we would come out of... A Coldplay song, and we would go into a Sigur Rós song, and we would come out of that, and we would go into like, you know, a Kraftwerk song, or a Rhinoceros song, or a Breakestra song, or a Café Tacuba song. I mean,
that's what's supposed to happen.
These things can live together, and the bottom line is, if anything proved that people don't listen to music the way that they were told to for years and years. It's this thing we hold in our hand, the iPod that has now become the phone, where everybody is listening to their own radio station and mixing all the different genres together. If you're talking to an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old and you're asking them what they're listening to, you have young kids. They're not just listening to the same shit. I mean, I grew up and I was like, well, I can't like Motown because Motown belongs to those people. I'm a heavy metal guy.
Your example is my kid loves this band called Metz. Metz is just like super in your face, screamy, loves it, and then he'll listen to Marvin Gaye 2 seconds later.
Exactly.
Because that's what he does.
By the way, his kids are grown and they're almost retired. He doesn't have young kids. His kids are almost done.
But if we're going to like so my 16-year-old daughter is here right now and she was playing stuff through the car radio the other day because people don't listen to the radio, right? They just plug their phone in. And she was listening to, you know, like Triple X Stencion, you know, the rapper who passed away last year. And that's sort of what I call sort of like emo hip hop, you know, that's so popular with the kids. But then she would go from that to, you know, Cigarettes After Sex, you know, that band, and then go from that to Cage the Elephant.
Right.
You know, so that's the way people listen to music.
In other
now.
Words, people can stand a bit of eclecticism in their
Everybody's
diet.
Been going on. Joan Baez and Dylan weren't the same, but they were lumped into the same category. And Zeppelin, people bought Zeppelin albums. They bought Carole King albums. They bought Joni Mitchell albums. They bought Black Sabbath albums. They bought Eric Clapton albums. They bought all that shit.
If it's presented in the right way, and if it's presented, let's be honest, you don't want to go, you don't want a real jarring shift from, you know, from something
you
that's all nice.
Keep the yacht rock out of it.
Yeah, but if
everybody's got an opinion now. But you know what's funny? You talk about the jarring segues, but that was what MTV became famous for, and that's why.
And where are they now?
Well, they're gone, but they were responsible for that awful segue where you could segue from The Cure to ABBA or whatever it is, because they didn't care about genres. It was like everything was the same.
But it was all about it was all about images, though, as well.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this, gentlemen. I really think that we should just come back every week and
let's do it again.
Do it here.
Yeah, right. My pleasure.
Nick,
great hanging out
thanks
with
for
you.
Being patient, especially with him.
I got nothing else to do.
All right, very good. All right, Michael, hit the outro.
We should get some chow. What are you guys saying to
I'm
eat?
I'm hungry.
What's the cuisine of Northridge? Pancakes?
I think there's a Burger King across the campus here. Yeah.
Let's go to Carl's Jr. and get a Beyond Meat, Carl's.
Oh, would you stop with that shit?
I love Beyond Meat. It's great.
All
have
right,
you
that's
tried
the show.
It yet?
I have not tried
Join
it
Join us next week as our next guest will be...
Who the fuck knows?
Some guy with a saxophone in the other room. Slam the door.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.